First of all, the beauty of the human person in all of their expressions, right? And this is what, in my view, this is the deeper sense of diversity. This is what I'm about, is to be able to look at the person, behold them, love them, value them for who they are. Now, there's a challenge that we have to do, as you know, with all the internal biases and different types of how that shows up. Because of background, it's the natural thing. We're all biased in some way, because just like we don't have a total self-awareness, we all have these biases that we have to work through because of background, because of education. And I just consider myself, since we're also, this is about gratitude, I consider myself very blessed with the international intercultural experience that I've had, right? And I've had to work with people from, I would say, you know, 30, 40, 50 countries in all the continents. And so you learn so much. But for example, you know, when I step into the DE&I educational space, in other words, I step in to get trained to be certified, right? I don't fit the mold.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi, and today I'm joined by Matthew Brackett. Matthew is a leadership educator and consultant with over 30 years of experience. He has held leadership roles in Italy, Ireland, England, Colombia, Chile, and Mexico, plus served as a special staff officer and chaplain in the United States Army. Matthew leverages his heart-centered care for thousands, his familiarity with complex global organizations, his broad intercultural experience, and his postgraduate degrees in human development and leadership to offer a uniquely insightful perspective. His candid, sincere, and vulnerable approach to leadership will offer an enriching blend of experience, education, and inspiration. Welcome, Matthew.
Thank you, Candice. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
This is going to be a fun conversation. I have so many questions I want to ask you about around resilience and around DEI. But before we get into it, let's hear from you. What is your unique story? How did you get to where you are today?
Thank you. My unique story, born the 10th of 13 children. That's unique in and of itself. 10th of 13 from small town New England. And not only that, my parents adopted two of those 13 are adopted, which is, I always say that they had to outsource to improve the quality. It's so... So yes, very, very generous. So that's where I'm from, small town, New England, everything, big family, but small town. And I grew up there and very faith-based origins, being Catholic and wanting to do something important in life, something that made a difference in time. And as we say, also in eternity. So wanting to make a difference. And so that led me to, I had a restless heart. And so I went to seminary at the age of 18. To become what they call a religious and a priest. Part of that was, I didn't know what to do with my life. So I think a part of it was escaping. I was escaping, you know, I wanted to get out of a small town New England and do something great. So I saw this as a ticket to do that. Not the best motives to do what I did, but that's what I did. And that was a fascinating journey. And then, you know, 10 years of education and training in that brought me, I did all my philosophy and theological studies in Rome, which is fascinating experience for anyone to be able to do that. Then after receiving what they call ordination as a priest, then I was, I worked in Rome. And then, as you said, I worked in all those different countries in leadership roles and in ministry roles. Fascinating, because when you go to different countries in the role of ministry, you become part of the fabric. So you're not there as a tourist. And so, you know, you speak the language, you're with the people, you understand the culture, you get really in there with, and you really become part of many people's lives. So that's what I did for 20 years. And part of that then was also as a chaplain in the Navy. And this is the very reduced version of my story. But there's an underlying current going from probably 2010. Okay. Underlying sort of, I use the word current because sort of like these waves or things going on inside of me that of certain discontent, of conflict with myself, which eventually leads to me putting the question on the table of, am I in the wrong place? So it took me, I didn't formally leave ministry until 2021. So there's a whole journey of searching that goes on there, and discernment. And I was in some pretty dark places, although I continued to minister, and I would like to say that I continued to minister really well, but inside I was carrying around a lot of weight, emotional confusion, and a crisis of identity. Because I think along the journey, I lost myself in the process. While I did so many other things and I fit into all these other identities, I lost myself in the process. So I was on this journey also of self-discovery and of what I call coming home to myself. So in 2017, I take a sabbatical year. I go into inpatient care. I sign into a clinic for 4 months to really deal with all the emotional and mental and spiritual confusion that I had, and the weight and the depression and anxiety and all that. Because I needed professional help. And that's a big part of my story, because to own that was very challenging. And to be able to say, I am not well, I am sick, and I need to take care of this if I want to do anything, if I want to be any good to myself and to others moving forward.
There's so much there. Right. There's so much more. Is there more to your story?
So I took a sabbatical year. I lived with my dad. My mother had since passed. And so since I had been away for so many years, that's why I call that year sort of that journey home to myself in many ways. To reconnect with family, reconnect with my roots, reconnect with who I am, and through a therapeutic and spiritual journey. And that gets me to a much better place. I stepped back into ministry to try it out again. So for me, it was a thing of honesty. I think I'm at a better spot in life. I've worked through a lot of things. I want to give it another shot. And then things became clear that just wasn't the place for me. And I had done my years of service, and it was ready to move on to continue to serve people, but from in a different way, or from a different angle, different perspective. So there you go.
I have so much I want to talk to you about now. First of all, did you happen to listen to my interview with Brother Guy Consolmagno, the director of the Vatican Observatory?
Oh, no.
Oh, you should totally go back and listen to that episode. It's episode 169, because your story and his story have a little bit of a similarity in your origin,
right,
in the church, how you got started in the church. Right. So I find that very fascinating, that two people who took divergent paths within the church had very similar origin stories.
Interesting. I'll go back. It's 169, you said?
169, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a fascinating person. Anyway, okay, I want to dig into this whole thing. Okay, where I thought this conversation was going to go and where we're going to go are two different places, but let's go. So as a minister, people come to you with their problems.
Right.
So you are the therapist for a lot of folks. So you are taking on the burden of all the things that they've got going on in their lives. So kudos to you for taking time to help yourself. Do you want to talk about, I don't want to say this the wrong way, because I don't want to diminish the role that a minister has, but maybe a minister isn't the right person to go to when you're struggling with inner demons, right? So how do we get that message across?
Right. Well, it depends. Now, ministers, they have a role. Okay. But I think sometimes, because they become such points of reference for their communities, it's very important for a person to know, let's just use myself as an example, to know when there's situations or problems or topics that I can deal with, and there's other things that I'm not. And to know how to send those people to identify and send them, but there's people in ministry don't always have that training on how to identify things and how to point people in the right direction for the professional support they need. I don't know if I'm not really answering that question. And there's certain things that a minister is there to work with. But let's clarify your question about what you mean by dealing with inner demons.
Okay. So my grandmother went to her priest. Mm-hmm. In the 1950s, and said, my husband is abusing me and my children. And the priest blamed it on her and said it was her fault.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's a personal story with my own family history, right? So that's a unique unique story. And it was in the 1950s. But if you're saying, I'm feeling suicidal, maybe the answer isn't you need to pray more. Maybe the answer is you really need to go talk to a therapist, right?
Right. Yes, this is such a good topic. Just like we would say in ministry, I think there's a lot of therapists that aren't necessarily good at what they do. Okay.
I agree with you. I do agree with you.
So in any field, people have to be really well prepared to do what they do. Now, I agree. And when we talk about faith, now I'm going to go on a tangent here, but because it has to do with leadership and a lot of other stuff. But when we talk about faith, when things are not managed properly in the relationship, in the faith domain, the damage goes much deeper. And that's a topic I'm passionate about, because oftentimes people in ministry don't realize that the weight that their word is given. Right. Go back to this example. Right.
Or they do know the weight that their word is given and they abuse it.
Well, or they, yes, or they do. And then they're really in ministry for the wrong reasons. Okay. And because there's this ministry attacks people that are really wired for that and made for that, but it can also attract a lot of narcissists, a lot of people that are full of themselves, because it's a platform to be able to be the center of attention and to be the point of reference. I think it's hard. The discernment process needs to be improved, but I think it's also hard to note that very fine line. And then people can become that. I think when they go into ministry, if they're not spiritually grounded and humble, then they can become that. They can become very self-centered, and then they have power over people. And we could talk about that in a lot of realms, right? Even just in the public speaking realm, I talk about that. People that take the stage have so much, they're given so much power by the audience, and they have to use that very carefully, okay? Because people, again, they say things that are not accurate or whatever. So, but let's go back into ministry. Yes, the power there. And so we, in ministry, we walk on sacred ground, and we must do so with such love, with such respect, with such caution, and as servants, not as masters. But that gets twisted a lot, as we've seen in many ways. But when that happens in the faith realm, when leadership is dysfunctional or toxic or just unhealthy leadership and use of power, it damages much deeper fibers of the human person. And we could say the same thing about when dynamics like that happen in the family structure as well.
Or in the business structure.
But that deeper, I think in family and in faith, that there's some deeper fibers that can be really touched through by abuse.
Yeah.
This is so interesting. So yes, and a lot of people, and I still get this a lot, because I hear about let's use the Catholic example, because that's my faith background. I hear about, advice the priests give. I said, they're so off.
Yeah. Right?
And we have to be very careful, because people take it very seriously. Just like what happened to your mom. I'm sure she took that very seriously and then was living with this guilt and with shame. And then she was stuck in that relationship and didn't make moves make moves. Right?
Well, my mom was a child at the time, and she was being abused by her stepfather. Oh, so this is my grandmother that had been told that she wasn't a good enough wife. So that's generations ago. Yeah. The 1950s was 70 years ago. Oh my God. I was also raised in the Catholic faith. I call myself a Reformed Catholic though.
Right. Yes.
So I understand that perspective. And I really don't know a lot about other Christian religions. I've done a lot of research into other religions like Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam, because I'm fascinated by the commonalities of all religion, mm-hmm. and especially how Buddhism is like this overarching umbrella, and then everything underneath it. I mean, people don't want to hear that, but it's really true. Buddhism is like the umbrella and everything else is underneath it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but Buddhism, that's my perspective.
No, it is. But Buddhism would also be considered a philosophy, in which would understandably make it an overarching, because it's a philosophy that applies to human beings.
Correct.
In all times and all places. So I think.
Correct.
Yes.
That's true. So Buddhism and Confucianism are philosophies, not religions. That is true. But some people don't understand the difference.
Right. No. Yes.
Yeah.
So very well said. Thank you, Candace.
Well, thank you. So understanding that is where I'm coming from, this is a very interesting conversation for me. So you went and sought help because you knew that you weren't in the right place to get the help that you needed. Mm-hmm. That's resiliency, because you understood that you needed help. So let's talk about resiliency. Let's just pivot to resiliency. Talk to me about that.
Resilience is another topic that I'm passionate about. You let me know where you want to go with this, but I would say, you know, there's different ways to define resilience, and the simplest thing is sort of like this ability to bounce back, and or to bounce back better, or to bounce back, bounce beyond, right? But in resilience, we have to be very careful not to compare ourselves with others, because we all have different levels of resilience. Okay, sometimes we can compare ourselves, and that doesn't do anyone any favors, because we think, well, I need to be like that, or I need to be like that. No, and resilience is like many things. Resilience has there's different pieces to the puzzle, and we won't get into all the different pieces right now. But a lot of it has to do with my own self-awareness, my knowledge of myself, my awareness of myself, and then the ability to navigate that in a healthy and appropriate way. Then it's how to navigate also my surroundings, right? So there's the whole thing around awareness, self-knowledge, and knowledge of others, and all that is part of the resilience, because it's only when we are aware can we know how to address situations and circumstances, right? And also to know our limits, you know, so setting boundaries and knowing our limits is also part of that. Healthy lifestyles, routines, and all habits, right, is also, these are all little things that build up the muscles of resilience. And sometimes we don't pay attention to those.
Most of us aren't self-aware.
Yes.
I mean, self-awareness is the highest level of Maslow's hierarchy, right? So most of us don't get there.
Right. Yes. So self-awareness, it's a funny thing, because as human beings, we all think we we're self-aware, right? That we know ourselves perfectly and we have the whole picture. But we also know that's not true, right? That we all have blind spots. And I love this because, for example, in this conversation, right, I am discovering myself through you. Right? As human beings, this is what we need. That's mm-hmm. why we are relational beings. So I discover myself through Candace, through your eyes, through your knowledge of me, through what you see. Now, that's still only one part of the picture, right? Then there's everything. But that's part of, that just proves our blind spots and how we get to know ourselves. We can't know ourselves only through ourselves. We can know ourselves through others. And then obviously through situations and circumstances.
That is the perfect lead into DEI. Because you talk about holistic DEI, right? Which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. So
that's right.
I would love to hear your perspective on what that looks like holistically, because what you just said perfectly led into that. We can't know ourselves unless we know what other people think of us. And you don't know what other people think of you unless you have a diverse people around you mm-hmm. giving you feedback. That's right. My opinion, but what's yours?
All right. No, and seeing ourselves through the eyes of others, right? And there's cultural eyes, right? And then there's just everyone has different backgrounds, different educational backgrounds. And when I talk about DE&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion, there's a few things that we want to begin with. First of all, there's a lot of ideological and political twists into the DE&I space. So it becomes a very touchy topic. Because in my view, some of it is, it begins with erroneous foundations based on Marxism. And so we have to be careful with that, because it's very subtle, okay? And this is not totally a critique on Marxism as such, but when we begin with erroneous foundations, then obviously then things, they're not strong foundations, things go off.
Yeah.
So without getting into all of that, I would just say that I believe, and because of my intercultural and international experience in ministry, but dealing with people of all classes and ages and colors and sexual orientations and all that stuff,
as a chaplain in the Navy, you dealt with different faiths as well.
Of course.
One chaplain, multi-faiths in the military.
I worked at a base of 5,000 Marines and sailors, and I was the only chaplain. And I took care of everyone. And I was there to safeguard their religious liberties, to make sure they had access to their religious liberties, and care for them as human beings, first and foremost, and then human beings in that specific environment, and also then to advise all the commanders that I served. So
the most powerful moment I've ever had in terms of understanding the diversity of the United States is my mother is buried in a national cemetery because my father served during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. So it's his plot, but your wife can be buried with you, right, at the national cemeteries. So my father's still alive. My mother was buried first. But as I walked along the cemetery, you know, and looked at all the gravestones, the number of different religions represented in that cemetery was overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And the ethnicities, the last names of these soldiers,
right. They
were all different ethnicities. America is this huge, ginormous melting pot, and we are giving ourselves a disservice. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
If we don't embrace that.
Right.
Okay. Sorry, definitely. I interrupted you, but I wanted to.
Thank you. No, that's so beautiful. That's such a beautiful image, right? And going back to my military service, same thing, huge. And I wanted to minister in a diverse environment. So that's partly why I went into that ministry. So when we talk about diversity, DE&I, there's surface level diversity, and then there's deep level diversity. The problem in the DE&I space is that the metrics make it difficult because the metrics only measure the surface level, right? And so I think it does a disservice, because if that's the only thing we're going by, then we might not have such
diversity. My daughter is a Korean American Latina.
Right.
I mean, you can't get more diverse than that.
Right.
She has a lot of boxes that she checks when they ask her what her ethnic background is.
Right. Right. And there's a surface level to that, right? I use the example in a boardroom. We could have people of all different colors, religions, sexual orientations, genders, whatever, but they could all think the same way, right? According to the metrics, there's diversity, right?
Yeah.
So there's a deeper level, and people don't always pay attention to that because of the it's hard to measure the deeper level. So, but that's important to take into account. It's also important that when we look at something, just to assume that when everyone is the same color, or even the same gender, there still could be diversity there. We can't necessarily assume that there's no diversity. Okay.
Within a family, you have diversity of thought and beliefs.
Yes.
You know, my sisters and I do not have the same religious beliefs.
Right.
You know, we have three sisters, three different religious beliefs,
right,
within one family raised by the same two parents.
Mm-hmm. And then parents are fascinated by how each child is so different. Right? They're like, where'd this child come from? Right? Everyone's just so different. And there's such a beauty to that. And that's why I want to focus on is, first of all, the beauty of the human person in all of their expressions. Right? And this is what, in my view, this is the deeper sense of diversity. This is what I'm about, is to be able to look at the person, behold them, love them, value them for who they are. Now, there's a challenge that we have to do as, you know, with all the internal biases and different types of how that shows up because of background. It's the natural thing. We're all biased in some way, because just like we don't have a total self-awareness, we all have these bias that we have to work through because of background, because of education. And I just consider myself, since we're also, this is about gratitude, I consider myself very blessed with the international intercultural experience that I've had, right? And I've had to work with people from, I would say, you know, 30, 40, 50 countries in all the continents. And so you learn so much. But for example, you know, when I step into the DE&I educational space, in other words, I step in to get trained to be certified, right? I don't fit the mold. I am a white, heterosexual, cisgender male. Right? And the way people dealt with me and looked at me when I was like, what are you doing here? Which also speaks to another type of bias, right?
Yeah, it does. And that's unfortunate.
No, but we all, it's something we all deal with. And so, but I think just the human person, as a country, we still have a lot to do because we are superficial. We're judgmental. We a lot of times we focus on the externals. And another example, as going back to my ministry, you know, the priests hear confessions and things like this. So, you know, someone comes to confession who didn't fit the mold, right? Long hair, tattoos, earrings, and all this, and everything going on, everything that you would think of the most beautiful soul, one of the most beautiful souls I've ever encountered. Right? And that was a lesson for me. Right? And I learned early on in ministry that I can never judge.
Yeah.
And I am grateful for that.
Yeah. My favorite story about this, and I'm sure he'll be fine with me sharing it. So I have a friend named Rashid. And Rashid is very spiritual. And he was talking to another man, and the man said, you are one of the best Christian men I know. And Rashid said, that's interesting because I'm Muslim. And so it's also about perspective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's also about perspective. Yes. Yeah. So I love that story because he really is one of the most spiritual people I know. Kind, mm-hmm. kind, you know. So yeah, it was a very interesting story. And I wonder if it changed the other man's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, we see ourselves through our own lens. It's when we can see ourselves through others, like you said mm-hmm. earlier,
yeah.
is when we really know ourselves.
And so, yeah, that person makes, like all of us, we can make assumptions.
Yeah.
Right? He made an assumption that if he's spiritual, then that person must be Christian. There's a lot of spiritual and well-connected people to the transcendent that aren't Christian.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, so let's go back to DE&I for a minute. So the audience for this show are micropreneurs, solopreneurs, people who are doing mm-hmm. their own marketing, maybe some micro-influencers, which are... influencers that don't have a million followers. So that's right. Who's listening right now. And when I say solo micro, I mean, we're talking people who work by themselves. So how can people who work by themselves incorporate some of these ideas about DEI, about resilience, about multiculturalism into what they're doing, even though they work by themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a yes. hard question for you, but I'm laying it on the table for you.
Put me on the spot here. But as you know, first of all, you have to know your audience, right? And so I would encourage them to try to see what are they, when they focus on an audience, are they limiting themselves? I can broaden my audience, the people that I want to reach to, and how am I going to do that? How am I going to either the product or my message? How am I going to speak to people of other cultures, of other mentalities, of other backgrounds? That's one thing. And then I'm a firm believer in access or contact with, to go out there, right, and step out of your, I could say comfort zone, or step out of your normal circles and step into diverse circles where you can meet people where they're at, understand them, because that will also feed that other aspect about your messaging and your who you want to sell to or who your people are. But you're going to broaden that when you start to meet many more people. So in here, I'll just focus on the surface stuff. Go meet people of different color, people of different languages, cultural backgrounds, meet people of different sexual orientations or identify differently in their genders. Or go out there, meet them.
Yeah. And I think that joining a chamber of commerce as a solopreneur is a great, and I should practice what I preach. But if you are a solopreneur and you join a chamber of commerce, you will be exposed to people of different faiths,
mm-hmm.
Ethnic backgrounds, belief systems, all that, because a chamber encompasses all business owners within an area.
Right.
So that's a great, just, if that's the first thing that you do or the only thing you do, then you're going to meet other people.
You're going to meet other people. Yes. And even go to different churches. Not because you have to necessarily agree, but you go there to understand why they believe what they believe,
yeah.
Why they practice how they practice.
My daughter my daughter is in graduate school now, but when she was in college, she had an assignment in, I think it was a history class, to go to a church, to visit a church that she didn't belong to, like mm-hmm. a different faith than she did.
Right.
And so we chose the closest church to us. And it was really interesting in that the minister was actually also formerly Catholic and had changed religions because he fell in love with a woman and wanted to get married. So there's so many interesting stories about Catholic priests. Right? So he was the minister for this church. I can't remember what kind of church it was. It's just down the street. I should know because I see it every day. Right. But he spent some time talking to Dorothy about his religion and how it compared to other religion. It was just mm-hmm. really, if you just ask, I mean, she told him straight up, I'm here because of a college assignment. And he took the time to talk to her about wonderful. His faith and his religion and his church. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice. People will give you their time if you ask them.
Yes. Yes,
that's an important lesson.
It is. Sometimes we hold ourselves back either by whatever prejudices we might have or assumption, or we hold ourselves back by thinking that people don't have time or not interested or they're going to be offended or whatever other things that can get in the way.
Yeah.
The worst thing that can happen is people will say, no, they're not interested. Then you know.
Yeah. So what do you do? What's your, what do you do when you're out there working? Who are you helping when you work in your field?
Yes, but I think because of my vast background, there's a lot of people that come to me. And really, I market myself. I look to serve more people in senior leadership roles. And to meet that at that intersection between their personal and professional, I would even call it like a sort of a holistic approach to leadership coaching. And I call myself more than an executive coach because we look at both, right? We deal with the personal and professional, and how you in leadership is sort of that, again, holistic approach of how I lead myself, how I lead in my inner circles and with of influence, and then how I lead professionally and in organizational contexts.
Yeah.
So there's like different levels to that leadership and all things. And then there's a coaching element. I really firmly believe in the art of coaching, but then there's a mentorship element to it. And there's a consulting and educational element to it.
Ooh, let's break that down. Let's define all four of those things.
Okay. Well, boy, I didn't study for this interview, but yeah. So coaching is the art of very attentive listening and curious and powerful questioning with the conviction that the client has the answers inside of them. So I facilitate a process to try to draw those answers out through listening and questions. So you have to be tuned in. Now, so the powerful thing about it is when someone finds their answers, it's very powerful. It's transforming. Oftentimes, we switch very easily as human beings to advice mode. Well, what I think is, and what you should do is, oftentimes that's not transformative, right? And it doesn't do it. And then the person doesn't feel listened to, doesn't feel understood. Many times I've shifted to that in short conversations because I think I don't have time to do all the other things. So I shift to that. So that's coaching. Mentorship is more about where I've been in certain places or been in roles. And so then you share experiences of how you did it or what you lived or whatever. Consulting is then more from an area of expertise in education. These are my areas of expertise. And so I can offer you advice and to whatever situations you're going on how to deal with situations. So very situational. That's how I would explain all those in the shortest way possible.
I think we missed training or education.
Oh, no, I mixed it with consulting.
Okay.
So education, I love the word education. I use it when I say that I'm an educator. Because if I said if I'm a speaker, I just think that can be shallow. While there's a lot of power in speaking when you're a good public speaker, that's very powerful. But education is the ability to lead people out of themselves, you know, it's coming from the Latin word, what that means to really to lead people out of themselves into new areas.
Yeah.
And so I use the word educator because it's more than a speaker. I try to use solid concepts, build speaking on very solid foundational concepts. So I would never say that I'm a motivational speaker. I might be a motivational educator.
Yeah.
Because motivation speaks to the emotions. And I want to speak to emotions, but I also want to speak also to the intellect and to the mind.
That word educator isn't sitting with me because when I think of educator, I think of college professor or kindergarten teacher.
Right.
What's another word we can use? Because I also have a problem with public speaker. Like I don't, right. You know, even though I do some speaking, I don't really like saying I'm a speaker. So I kind of don't want to say educator either because I don't want people to think, oh, she's a teacher. Well, I don't qualify as, right. You know, I'm not a teacher.
Yes.
So
that's very well said.
What is, what, you know, and I love the word edification, but a lot of people use it in the wrong way.
Right.
So edification has come to mean to build up instead of to educate, which is, you know, the root mm-hmm. word, the Latin root of, right. of it is to educate. But it, mm-hmm. you know, which is also building up, I guess.
That's right.
So I don't know. What is another word? Mm. Let's solve this problem together, Matthew.
That's right. So what have I heard before? You know, motivational teacher. I've heard that a motivational. Then this has been a play on words, but it's not coming to me now. We're between speaker and educator. Speak yeah. educator. No, but
there's a question for the audience. All right, listener, what is the word that you think we should be using here? Head over to the show notes and leave a comment.
Yes.
If you don't want to head to the show notes, you can look for Good Pods, because Good Pods has a way for you to interact with the show as well. So look for this episode of Gratitude Geek on Good Pods, or head over to the website, gratitudegeek.com, find the episode, and leave your thoughts about what the word is that we're looking for.
What is the best term that encapsulates what a speaker and an educator is? Is that right?
Yeah, a speaker.
Without using those words.
Yeah. A person who, it's not lecturer. Mm-hmm. It's not lecturer. It's something else. There's something else. But I totally get what you're saying, and I'm on the same page as you. Public speaker doesn't resonate with me. Educator doesn't resonate with me. Teacher doesn't resonate with me. But there is something that's going to resonate. So audience, I'd love to hear your feedback. And I'm going to share it with Matthew, too. So please, let us know. Let us know what you think. Okay. I'm sorry, I have a hard stop, and we've got about 10 minutes left. I'd love to hear, let's talk about marketing, because most of the folks tuning in also want to know about marketing. So in the realm of what you're doing now, how do you get your word out? How do you let people know what you're doing?
Yes. Thank you. And I will profess that I am not a good marketer. Okay. And I'm not a good seller. So it's a muscle.
You're not a good speller.
A seller. So those are things I never had to do. And it just sort of doesn't fit with my
personality. I am going to completely disagree with you 100% on sales.
Okay, good.
You are a salesperson. You sold every time you stood on a pulpit.
That's right.
And preached.
That's right.
Right? You sold every time that you helped somebody in your capacity as a minister. You are selling them on the idea of finding their faith.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. So there you go.
Yeah. So yes. Erase that from your brain.
I will embrace that. I suppose I have sort of resistance towards certain sale strategies.
Yeah. Right?
And so that's maybe why I don't want to identify as
selling. Yes, is educating. It really
that's
is.
Right. It is. So
all you're doing is educating the consumer on the product or the service that you're offering,
and on the value, right?
The value
that's in it for them. Yes. Mm-hmm. So well said. Thank you for that. what I do is on social media, I have a strategy of really, I think consistency is really important. So first of all, clarifying the message, which took me a while, because I wanted to do all kinds of things. And so I had to sort of say, all right, I need to focus, right? I began to see value in that. So clarifying the message and then consistency in the messaging. Okay, now I use social media. Now, I don't expect to get a lot of coaching clients through that. I prefer to get those. I expect to get those through word of mouth and to personal references. But for my education, speaking, or whatever that word is, social media is very important nowadays, because that's what people will look at: how much of a following, how much influence do they have, how well known are they. So I'm trying to build that up as a way to sort of create visibility and credibility.
So I want to go back to this word of mouth. How yes. Because that is the number one way to get good clients.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get if you have an awesome client that you love working with and you want to meet more people like them, that client that you worked with, that you loved working with, needs to tell other people about you, right? Mm-hmm. So yes. How are you going about that?
I'm just beginning. So I don't have a whole lot of success stories to tell you. But I can say that the clients that I've worked with have had very good experiences.
Yeah.
And so I trust that they will pass the word to the right people.
Okay, you're trusting that's faith. So, as someone who has been marketing for 30 something years.
Oh boy!
So, oh my gosh, am I that old? You have to ask.
Yes.
So here's what I did when I was. My husband is a world class furniture maker. He's retired now, but he made handcrafted beds for people who collected antique furniture. So he made antique looking beds and king size beds for people who collected antique furniture. You cannot find a king size bed as an antique because they didn't have king size beds back in the day. So he made a bed for a modern mattress that matched their furniture. It was a highly niche market. And a lot of his clients were movie stars, Fortune 500 executives. And so this is how I did the word of mouth, right? Mm-hmm. I sent a thank you card. And in that thank you card, I included a gift. And I just said, we would love to see what your new bed looks like in your home, please send a picture. And they would text pictures to me and tell me how yummy the sea salt caramels were that they received along with their thank you card.
Right.
And so, and along with that, they would also talk about how much they love their new bed. So I gathered testimonials from these clients who allowed me to use their name. Some of them are famous, right? And then I put those on our website and shared those testimonials.
Right.
And then they, you know, or sometimes they would even post to social media. That was always the best.
Right.
Here's a picture of my new bed on social media. So that is, that's asking for the word of mouth.
Yes.
But it's leveraging the happy clients.
Mm-hmm.
Leveraging. So I know that what you do is not a physical product and you can't ask for a photo, but right. you can ask for the Google review, or you can ask for, would you mind helping me create a portfolio of testimonials mm-hmm. that I can share with future clients? And if you did a great job, they're going to be happy to do that.
Right. Yes. Okay. So I want to improve on the ask. And I was just thinking about that these last few days of reaching out to people and doing that. So yes, thank you for encouraging me and clarifying how important it is. But the ask. I remember hearing about your thank you notes and all that on another podcast that you did. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you. The power of just sending a thank you card is so remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that comes back to gratitude. That's why I'm the gratitude geek. That's right. Because the thank you card, let me tell you, if you go into the habit of either saying thank you or sending thank you cards, you won't have to ask for business because you're going to get it anyway. Right. So I also have a gratitude practice that I'm sure you're going to appreciate because of where you are in the world. So at 12:34 every day, an alarm goes off on my phone and I say five things out loud that I'm grateful for, or I send five text messages to five different people telling them how much I appreciate them. That happens wonderful. Every day. And I learned that from Anthony Papone, who was a previous interview on this podcast. Okay.
12, why 12:34?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things I'm grateful for.
That makes sense.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that a great gratitude practice?
It is good. And it's gratitude is so, as you, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here about just the importance of gratitude, how good it is for the soul, for the spirit, for your emotional life, but how good it is for other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have a gratitude practice that you have?
First of all, I think with people, I try to be very gracious and thankful. You know, anyone I meet on the street, people that I see cleaning the street or cleaning, you know, whatever. I always, hey, thank you for what you're doing. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not a, you know, sure everyone's doing it because it's their duty, but I also believe that thanking people for who they are, for what they do is really important. So I do actually, and actually someone said to me the other day, you say thank you too much. Right.
And I don't think that's possible.
Right. It's part of who I am. Right? I think people, if they're not used to it, they can find it kind of awkward, or they don't know what to do when you say thank you. Right. So it puts them in an awkward position, but I gratitude, and you might like this phrase, is the rarest of flowers in the garden of virtues.
Oh, I love that. Gratitude is the rarest of flowers in the garden of virtues. I love that. And I love that you say thank you to people for just doing their job. I don't know. Have you ever been to India? Do you want, I mean, the caste system in India had the untouchables who did all the jobs that nobody else wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And even though it's a caste system that doesn't really exist anywhere else, I mean, it does exist. We have a caste system here in the United States, and people who take out the you know, the garbage men and the people who clean the streets, and those people are, you know, people who pick vegetables in the fields. They have a very important job that the rest of us couldn't live our lives without. And nobody ever says thank you to them. So, you know, I love the idea of being more on purpose about saying thank you to people for doing their job.
Yes. And to really appreciate it. And again, this goes back to the dignity of what we're talking about, the dignity of each person and the dignity of work. There's no job that's better than other or higher or lower. It's just, we are all doing our little bit to.
Imagine if the people who are responsible for picking the vegetables and the fruit stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to think about that. Or the people who process meat, if they stopped working.
Right.
All you have to think about is what happened when the chicken, that we had a aviary flu take out, you know, a huge population of chickens last year.
That's right. Right?
Think about that. Mm. Imagine that happening across all fruits and vegetables and all meat.
Right.
Right. So we should really appreciate the people who do that work.
When I lived in Rome, I lived there for a number of years, and the garbage people would go on strike every once in a while. So what happened? There was piles of garbage all over the place.
Yeah.
Right. So it's about, yeah, the dignity of work, and then how people need to be receive the just compensation for what they do.
This is completely off topic, and I can't remember if it's Amsterdam. I think it's Denmark. Denmark has this system where they put these underground trash receptacles. So they don't do pickup. They don't pick up the trash from your house. Have you been to Denmark?
I have not.
Okay. So they don't pick up the trash in front of your house. You're responsible for taking your trash to one of these receptacles, and they have them everywhere. Like they're on every corner, right? So there are these underground receptacles, and you go and you put your trash in, and then they have recycle. And then this truck comes and picks up the receptacle, dumps it, and takes it away. And you don't ever see any trash anywhere because it's all underground.
Right.
And they don't have a mouse, you know, a rat problem or a raccoon problem because all the trash is underground.
And those, the Nordic countries, they have so much that we can all learn from.
Mm-hmm. Which is, how do we go down the trash conversation?
It's just about people doing their job and appreciating what everyone does.
Yeah. Yes. Which we should all do. I really appreciate this conversation. I really wish that I didn't have to cut it short because I've learned a lot from you today and I very much enjoyed chatting with you. But we do need to wrap up. So this is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
Thank you. Wow. I would have to say there's a few things. I'm thankful for so many people in my life that I've come across. People that have allowed me into their life. People that have trusted me to hold the sacredness of whatever they're going through. And also people that have supported me, right? During those times of challenge, of difficulties, many people leaned on me, you know, they leaned on my shoulder. They used my hand. I lifted them up with my arms, my hand. I walked to them with my feet. I was the smile for them. I was the encouraging word. But then during my times of crisis and darkness, so many other people were that for me. And I'm very thankful to them. And maybe there's people out there that I've never thanked them. Or I never noticed because of what I was going through. I didn't notice the extra effort that they made to care. So I'm thankful for those people. And I want to say a quick word on interdependence without getting too complex. But when we look at creation, everything in creation or in the world, everything needs each other. And as human beings, while there's part of us that likes to be independent and not need anybody, we all need each other. And there's a beauty to that. And there's a grounding element to that. There's a humility to that. But there's also a fulfillment in that. And so we all need each other. And I want to be thankful for the people that have allowed me into their life when they needed me. And the people that I've been able to lean on when I needed them.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Matthew Brackett. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is track 14 by Rep Rock and Soul Lily. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.